I did my PhD with Jerry Nelson, who had done his PhD with Dale Smith on birds foot trefoil, and I did it at Missouri, where Paul Buselink was working with birds foot trefoil. But I didn't actually start working myself with birds foot trefoil until I went to Utah State. We had an early adopter who had gone to New Zealand, and he had come back, and he wanted his dairy production system to be a grazing-based system, and so he changed to rotational stocking, and he put in perennial ryegrass and white clover, and our soils are 7-plus pH. And so what happened over time was that his perennial ryegrass faded, and the white clover tended to be very happy and spread, and so he would have patches of white clover and then had cattle that died of bloat. And so I started working with birds foot trefoil to look at trefoil grass mixtures, a number of grasses, a number of legumes, to find some non-bloating alternatives in our nitrogen-friendly, our legume-friendly environment. And so I kind of came to birds foot trefoil for the tannins, and I think I'm going to stay for the carbohydrates, because that's turned out to be interesting. And then after I started my mixture study and got into the literature on all the benefits of tannins and things that were found associated with birds foot trefoil, I found this study by Gordon Martin and his students that showed the gain, average daily gain. These are heifers, 2 years in Minnesota on, and it's hard to see the legend, but the top line on both graphs, the solid circles, that's birds foot trefoil, the open triangles, that's sandfoin, and then the open circles, the third line down is alfalfa, and the line that's lowest in both of these is the solid triangles, that's Sicer milk vetch. And so there was evidence from the 80s showing that birds foot trefoil provided better gain in cattle. And then about the time I was starting my mixture work with birds foot trefoil and these other legumes, there was this publication from New Zealand by Douglas and others showing the gain on birds foot trefoil of lambs versus alfalfa. So it's pretty spectacular. The difference there is the differential between birds foot trefoil and alfalfa in the male and the female and then the pool lambs. This was an ad libitum feeding study. And so in a follow-up study, the same group had a limited feeding allowance so that they could get down into how much difference was being made by the tannins. And so PEG will bind with tannins before the tannins can bind with proteins, and so they essentially, the minus PEG treatment is with tannins and the plus PEG treatment is without tannins. And so there was higher gain with tannins in birds foot trefoil, but it was lower in both, I think, because they only infused the plus PEG treatments. So there was some disturbance in that wasn't controlled for in the tannin study. But when they looked at the carcass gain, they felt that it wasn't actually down to tannins, because the plus and minus PEG treatments were not dissimilar within treatments. You can see the lotus versus the lucerne on the right. But there was a big differential between the gain on birds foot trefoil and on alfalfa still. In their study, although they didn't discuss it, they did show the soluble carbohydrate concentration in both birds foot trefoil and in alfalfa. In the offered feed, and this was grazed pastures, and so there is higher soluble carbohydrate in the offered feed, but also in the selected feed, where there's quite a big differential in the soluble carbohydrate concentration of the forage. So we saw differences in the non-fibrous carbohydrates, and so of these six graphs, I'm going to focus down on the one in the middle on the lower row, but this was a variety trial of 14 different birds foot trefoil varieties and two different alfalfa varieties, and everything was replicated three times. the blue in these graphs is alfalfa, and the points on the graphs are the three harvest dates, so the end of May, the middle of July, and the end of August in all cases. So the top left graph is crude protein. You can see there's higher crude protein in alfalfa. There's higher in the center, higher neutral detergent fiber in alfalfa than birds petrifoil, but also higher in DF digestibility. And so then that center graph on the lower row is the non-fibrous carbohydrates. And so the red line is the bird's foot trefoil. And the average there is around 40%, where for alfalfa at all three harvests, it's averages around 30%. Up in the right-hand corner is the following year. So this was planted in 2005, and the little graph in the corner is from 2009, where we sampled every 2 weeks, and then I've circled in green the three dates that are the same harvest dates. So you can see that the non-fibrous carbohydrate fluctuates, but it remained higher for most of the dates that we sampled in that next year, too. So we did a grazing study, and we have meadow brome grass, Sicer milk vetch, and bird's foot trefoil as pasture treatments, and these are irrigated pastures. It was a season-long grazing study, so we sampled from late May until the end of August, and these data are the average forage quality data for that year, 2013. We also had animals in the feedlot, and those data for the same parameters are on the right. And so I wanted to point out the non-fibrous carbohydrates. That's the line next to the bottom. So the meadow brome grass had about 20%. Our legumes had almost 40%, which was pretty close to what the feedlot ration contained. And then if you go up to the other line that's highlighted in red, the NDF, you can see that it was around 50 for the meadow brome grass and around 30 for the two legumes and the feedlot ration. So we just have very high quality forages. These were harvested just before the animals went into the pastures and freeze-dried. And so I just wanted to contrast it with other environments because I think that might explain eventually our higher carbohydrates too. But these are data from a study that was done in Missouri. Pure stands of birds foot trefoil and tall fescue. So for 2 years, 98-99 this spring. And so you can see the NDF ranged between, for the birds foot trefoil, ranged between 50 and 60%. Remember, ours were 30, and then the tall fescue ranged between 65 and 75%. So climate, I think, does make a big difference in what we find. I don't know the details of the study, but this was from the publication. So then I harvested some stands this year that we grew for hay. We're doing a hay feeding study using these same legumes, actually, that Gordon Martin used, but we're feeding hay. And I harvested them just before the forages were cut for hay, I think June 3rd. And then, again, freeze-dried the forages, and we separated them into leaves and stems. So the data that you see here are water-soluble carbohydrates and milligrams per gram of dry matter. The leaves are on the left in each case, and the stems are on the right. So alfalfa is there. You can see the data for leaves is less than bird's foot trefoil, which is just to the right of it. And the stem concentration of water-soluble carbohydrates in bird's foot trefoil is also higher than the alfalfa. The bird's foot trefoil and the sandfoin have about the same concentration of water-soluble carbohydrates, which is coincidental with Gordon Martin's study. And then the alfalfa and the Sicer milk vetch have the lower concentrations of water-soluble carbohydrates. I mastered the the phenylsulfuric acid method, but I didn't master the starch method yet. I've run it 3 times, and I think I have a bad enzyme, so I can't show you my starch data. But before I leave this page, I did want to point out the small burnet. It's a forb that we've gotten interested in, and it is a tap-rooted perennial. It's very drought-tolerant, but it also seems to be very happy under irrigation. And when I measured, we originally put it in our birdsfoot trefoil pastures as a non-fixing control, basically. So we put strips of it up the middle, very small strips of it up the middle of our birdsfoot trefoil pastures, and we noticed that when we turned our cattle in to each new paddock, they would race over to the small burnet and consume it, and then they would go ahead and graze the birdsfoot trefoil for the rest of the time that they were in the paddock. And it comes back every year. So it gets hammered by the cows, but it recovers. And so... It went forward. Okay. And so anyway, it has very high water-soluble carbohydrates, almost 25%. And so it really is candy, forage candy. And I'd be interested if anybody else is willing to do a study of this in different locations, because I think we need to explore it further. The starch concentrations in other studies are about 10% of the water-soluble carbohydrate, so I did think I could show you that. Mary Beth Hall, whose methods I am using to analyze the carbohydrates, analyzed the leaves and stems of alfalfa, and she got really low levels of starch. This is starch, just since I didn't have that data. And then the other three studies on this slide are from Eastern Canada, and you can see that starch as a percent ranges between 30 and 50% of the dry matter. But then I was really interested, the study on the far right in the corner is one that was also done in Eastern Canada and in two locations, so morning to peak starch. So this is transient starch, and it went from, in one location, 18 to 32 milligrams per gram, and in the other location, 30 to 60 milligrams per gram. That's the same range as you can see here of the total. And so it made the point in my mind that we really have to be very careful if we're going to report carbohydrates and starch, particularly to specify what time of day it was done. And then just to wrap up, I did take some sections of the stem of these legumes and grasses. And this is the stem of small burnet toward the, it's in the bottom third, so in the middle of the bottom third. And what you're looking at, it, at the top is pith, and then the strip is the vascular tissue with a lot of very highly lignified. On the right, the pink is lignin tissue. And then if you look closer, those little, if you can see them, the transparent granules in the cortex of the stem, that's starch. So I can't wait to get the starch numbers for these, because I think we've got literally forage candy in this small burnet. So that's my last slide.
Any questions for Jennifer? Got a couple, 1 or 2 minutes here.
I'm not entirely certain, but are you asking if we took data on when during the day the cattle were grazing in our pastures?
Yes.
Okay. And I did not, but my colleague, Juan Villalba, is doing studies with the same legumes and meadow brome grass as well. And he has taken those data. So I don't know the data, he hasn't analyzed it all yet because he was starting that study this past summer. But we will have data on exactly that.